Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. We are 1 week out from Thanksgiving, guys. So this episode, all about the big day. First up, Carla Lolly Music, our food director, talking about the big four. That would be turkey, gravy, mashed potatoes, and stuffing. You nail those, and you have nailed the meal. Carla's been here for, God, I don't even know how many years at Bon App, but she's tested and tested and retested and developed and sort of worked on every imaginable iteration of those dishes you can imagine. So Carla and I sit down and talk the best of the best. And after that, I talk with Rembert Brown, who wrote a beautiful piece in our November issue entitled Thank You God for This Food. Amen. It's about Rembert's growing up in Atlanta, his family's Thanksgiving, the conversations, the traditions, the cast of characters. Oh, yeah. And of course, his mother's mac and cheese. Before we start, though, another reminder to rate and review us on iTunes if you dig our show. But now, let's do this. Here's Carla and me.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, Carla, last year, for the very first time ever, I cooked Thanksgiving dinner, like, start to finish, the whole thing.
Me too.
Really?
Yeah, I'd never hosted before.
It's not easy to wrest from your parents the Thanksgiving meal.
It actually took me 2 years.
Meaning what?
Well, I was supposed to host the year before I did, but then my mom took it back.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of intense. She had some invites that were out there, and, you know, she felt bad about taking them, whatever.
She didn't feel that bad.
Not bad enough.
Carol Lolly would do that.
She was like, just one more time.
So,
all right. Hard.
It's hard.
I had a whole oven temperature thing. I was like, oh, I've written about this. I've edited recipes about this, but now it is happening to me.
A couple years prior, I did this thing where I was like partially hosting, but everyone was bringing. And the only thing, I was doing like one thing. I might have turned off the oven because it's got those electric controls when I thought I was changing the temperature. And then my brother's turkey came out of the oven like an hour and a half later than originally planned.
So it's just the turkey.
Yeah, we had a lot of very drunk guests by the time we sat down at the table.
Yeah.
All right, so what I want to talk about today is, let's say you're going to host. I want the listener, I want the reader, I want everyone to be able to, like, let's nail the essentials at least. You know, like, if you want to have friends bring this and that and have 17 pies and all that sort of stuff, but let's crush the basics.
So yeah.
I want to walk through those with you as featured in our November Thanksgiving issue. Bon Appetit, the cover line says, Thanksgiving lessons. We've got plenty of them.
Sure do.
And it's packed with all these lessons that you have gleaned over the years as test kitchen director,
because
you've tested a gazillion recipes, right?
It's Thanksgiving in July. Like, this is my 8th year or something?
Yeah. All right. So I'm gonna start, if that's okay.
Okay.
I want to talk about the essentials. And in my mind, the essentials are, maybe I'm wrong, mashed potatoes, stuffing, gravy, turkey.
Correct.
I mean, dessert, okay, but like, in terms of the meal itself, like, you have to have those four, right?
You could only have those four, I think, is an arguable case to make.
Yes.
It's like a meat plus three.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, some people say, oh, you gotta have cranberry sauce. I'm like, you don't have to have cranberry sauce. Like, you know what? You can keep your little sweet potatoes with the marshmallows. Like, no, I don't need those. All right. Let's start with mashed potatoes. Those are my favorite things in the world.
That's what I make. Even before I hosted, I was responsible for mashed potatoes going back probably 15 years.
Okay, so first question. Mashed potatoes. What kind of potatoes am I buying?
You're going to buy Yukon Golds.
Why?
They're a waxy potato. They're easy to get. They're very consistent. So potatoes, like, you know, potatoes change, and a Yukon, you're just not going to go wrong. If you have a ton of confidence and you want to branch out, that's fine. Go to the farmer's market and get a waxy potato. But if everyone used a Yukon Gold, everyone would have beautiful, creamy, golden mashed potatoes.
I feel like whoever branded Yukon Gold potatoes is a very smart person.
It's a good name.
You see them at the grocery store, you're like, oh, Yukon Gold.
Yeah. Yukon Gold, they're just consistent. You can get them the same size. You're never not going to be able to find them. And the difference between using a Yukon Gold and, say, an Idaho, which is a great baking potato, if you make mashed potatoes with an Idaho potato, you get more of like that dry, fluffy texture. And with the Yukon, you get more of a heavy, fatty, luxurious,
that's so
stretchy
interesting.
Texture.
That's fascinating, because growing up, my mom would always make mashed potatoes with Idaho. Idaho is the same as russet, correct?
Yeah.
And I know that texture of which you speak.
Yeah.
And I've always made my mashed potatoes with Yukon Gold, and they've always been, they're a little bit richer.
Luxurious. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so that I realize that, but without realizing it. All right, so you buy a bunch of potatoes. In our recipe here in the magazine, for 8 servings, you want to start with 4 pounds of potatoes.
Right.
Which is not as many potatoes as you think.
Well, this is a question that every year, doesn't matter how many times you've hosted, there's that moment like 10 days before when it's like, how many pounds of mashed, how many pounds of potatoes do I need again for how many people? And this is a generous ratio. 1 pound of potato for 2 people.
Yeah.
Basically. And then you can just scale up from there.
All right. So you got your 4 pounds of potatoes.
Yeah.
You peel them?
No. And
what?
Andy and I fought about this. I was shocked and amazed that he did not peel the potatoes after cooking them. I'm not saying you have to peel them before, but I always peel them after. Like,
wait, who peels potatoes after? Like, what are you talking about?
It's just so much easier. They slip right off.
Not if they're hot.
Well, obviously, but why? I didn't say pluck them out of the boiling water.
Yeah, but there are these things called vegetable peelers.
Uh-huh.
They work really well, especially that brand OXO, which, you know, a lot of people like.
So we're talking about something that is smaller than a tennis ball, right? And you've got, I don't know, how many times did 8 people come over for Thanksgiving? No, it's more like you're hosting for 16. So you have 8 pounds of potatoes. These are Yukon Golds. They fit in the palm of your hand. Peeling all of those with a vegetable peeler when they're raw is a lot harder than...
Hey, dude, try joining the army. What do you think? You know, like, I don't want to hear about it, all right?
Well, the thing is, you don't have to peel them at all. But in my book, I totally understand the logic of cooking a potato with the skins on, or mm-hmm. with the jackets on, if mm-hmm. you want to say that. Because they don't absorb as much water. They don't get waterlogged. They don't get all... like too saturated. You want them to absorb the milk and the butter. And this recipe also has a little bit of cream, I believe. Yeah.
He's boiling them whole.
Right.
Until they're tender but not crumbly, 30 to 35 minutes. Drain, briefly rinse with cool water to remove any excess starch, and return potatoes to a warm pot off heat to dry while you heat the milk mixture.
So if I were Andy.
Yeah.
I would be at home reading this recipe and I'd be like, that's all fine, young man, but I'm also going to peel mine. Because I've done it both ways. I've spent a lot of time making mashed potatoes and I don't like any little brown flecks. So in Andy's book, which is the book we're talking about, after the potatoes are cooked.
Whole. Put them back in the pot so they steam and a lot of that excess moisture.
Some of that excess moisture comes off and then they go through either a food mill or a ricer.
And Andy's contention is that when you put them through a food mill or a ricer, most of that skin gets left on the other side of the fence.
That was his argument.
Okay, so you put the mashed potatoes through a food mill, which is the hand crank thing, or the ricer, which looks like a giant Play-Doh. Looks like a giant like garlic press.
Exactly.
You extrude it. You have this nice fluffy potatoes.
Yep.
You're adding hot milk at that point, or what are you doing?
It's an infused milk and cream mixture. And I thought this was really a smart thing to do and something that I would definitely replicate, because you infuse the mashed potatoes with this milk and cream that's been heated with a good amount of garlic, an entire head of garlic, a generous amount of rosemary, and is seasoned itself. So the milk and the cream, the fat in that dairy, like carry all of those flavors into the mashed potatoes without having like...
But you're removing the garlic and the rosemary.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like you're squeezing cloves of roasted garlic into the potato. It's just that all of that flavor is in the milk and the cream, and then that just like emulsifies into the potato.
Okay, so now this is something which... I feel like this is something that my mom did, and I probably do, that she would always melt the butter into the milk.
You could do that,
but I think a lot of you sort of Frenchy people like to do chopped up room temperature or cold butter folded into the potatoes.
Yeah, not cold butter. I actually put my butter into the food mill as the potatoes are passing through, so they just like they all get sort of passed through at the same time.
Okay.
But you wouldn't do cold because you don't want to cool down the potato mixture at all.
Okay.
But you can, you know, Andy has you put the butter in first and then follow with the milk and cream mixture.
And that's it.
Salt and pepper. Yeah.
Taste.
Delicious.
That's it. Can I say this? Can I add something?
Please.
Especially at Thanksgiving when you're making things a little bit ahead. And we talked about this on a macaroni and cheese podcast, you and I.
Recently.
you need a bit more liquid than you expect to get those potatoes really creamy and moist.
Totally. There should be a moment when you're making mashed potatoes where you should be scared that you ruined them. And especially if you're making them a little bit ahead, which I totally recommend and believe in, and totally believe in reheating mashed potatoes and not doing that in a double boiler. You just, you can keep them warm. They need to be loose from the beginning.
All right, Carla.
Yes, sir.
If you have mashed potatoes,
yeah,
you know what you need with them?
I do.
What?
Gravy.
You got to have gravy. You got to have gravy. And that I contend that this is the most intimidating, daunting thing to make at Thanksgiving.
It just shouldn't be.
But it is. People freak the F out about, they're like, the pan drippings and the turkey's resting. And do I skim the fat? And do I need one of those separators that you get at the place that has the nozzle and or the spout or whatever the hell it is? And how do those things even work? And
I just feel like every adult should channel calmness around gravy so that the next generation will have only these wonderful, calm and fond memories of gravy being made.
So how do you make gravy?
Are you asking me, or are you asking me what we put in the magazine?
You can do either. Just tell me. They want to go. If people want to go on the internet and look at these recipes, they can on bonappetit.com.
So the way that I would make gravy, I actually don't make gravy because Carol Lolly makes the gravy. But the way that I made the gravy at my own home was more similar to how we have it in the magazine. So the way that I would make gravy is the first thing I would do maybe a week or two before Thanksgiving. I could even do it this weekend, many weeks before Thanksgiving. Is make a really good poultry stock.
And when you say poultry, it could be turkey, could be chicken, does it
matter? It could be a combo. Turkey, chicken, and Brad Leone, whose stock recipe we use on a daily basis in the test kitchen, he puts a ham hock in his.
For a little depth.
A little depth. He loves anything gelatinous, that guy, you know? And that porky flavor, it's not like anybody's going to be mad about a little porky flavor. And that's a very inexpensive easy to get little knuckle or bone.
Yeah, and I'm looking at Brad's recipe right now, simply called Thanksgiving stock.
I mean,
very creative. You got a couple pounds of chicken wings, two large turkey wings. You got some olive oil, you got your onions, carrots, all that sort of stuff. Some crimini mushrooms, one smoked ham hock, and you got some parsley, yada, yada, yada. He does a thing where he browns the chicken bones,
yeah. Which is nice. It's just more flavor.
Yeah.
Just deeper, more flavor. I would do that, actually. I would roast the bones and deglaze it with some water and then transfer everything. Add your hock, add your parsley stems, some leek greens. You got a carrot, put it in there, celery. I don't believe in the kitchen soup mentality of making stock.
Do you mean
kitchen
sink?
I do. I mean kitchen sink. Yeah. Which then, once you put it in the pot, becomes a kitchen soup.
In terms of just throw whatever you got in the fridge in?
You don't want to put very strongly flavored things in there or crappy looking soft vegetables or just because you have an overripe tomato. Please don't put
it
in
there.
Yeah. So you stick with the classics. Parsley, peppercorn, leek, a carrot, an onion, a shallot, whatever.
It's time to make the gravy.
It's time to make the gravy. So you've roasted your turkey. Your turkey comes out of the pan. You drain off the fat.
A big turkey's got to rest for an hour.
Easily. You know? Yeah. And that's plenty of time to kick everybody out of the kitchen and say, go have another Manhattan or whatever, and I'll be in here alone. That would be great, wouldn't it? But that never happens.
No, because everyone wants to hang out.
Everybody wants to be in the kitchen, and that's when the turkey comes out. Everybody thinks that's a great time to come in and be a jackal.
Yeah, it's where the action is.
People have come into the kitchen and ripped off pieces of turkey butt and crispy skin.
That's so hard not to do, though. Because it is the best part. After someone carves the turkey, there's all the sort of the drippings and the little bits and everything on the cutting board. After they kind of scoop up and put all the nice, nicely beautiful breast meat pieces on the thing, just that detritus left over.
That's where to be.
I like to swoop in then.
That's where to be.
Yeah.
I kind of want to split the difference with this. I have never made a roux in the roasting pan over the two burners. I think that is actually really difficult.
Okay, so then what do you recommend?
So I would deglaze the pan. So I've defatted it, right? I poured the fat out of the pan.
Which pan? The roasting
pan? The roasting pan.
Okay.
And then I would take some of my stock and I would deglaze the roasting pan.
Over burners. Yeah, so you have all the crispy bits on the bottom of the pan. You pour out the excess fat.
Right.
You splash in some stock. It's simmering. And you got one of those flat sort of wooden spatula things you're scraping.
Yeah. And then I would pour that from one of the corners into the pot that I'm going to make the gravy in.
I totally don't understand. So then you So
I loosen everything up.
Yeah.
I got all the bits.
Okay.
I've got the juices. Mm-hmm. I have some of my stock reducing. And then I pour that into a new, smaller pot.
And then what do you do?
Then I do a beurre manier, because that's what Carol Lolly does.
Why do you got to bust out the fancy language again?
So a beurre manier is a raw roux. That's all it is.
So what
it's
do you
butter
do?
And flour, equal amounts of butter and flour that are mashed together with a fork, which was one of my jobs when I was little, and I loved the soft butter and the flour.
Okay.
And you make a paste, and then that's your thickener. So you whisk that into the whatever pan drippings you got with your stock and adding more stock. And you basically whisk in this butter and flour mixture until you get the consistency you want.
And that's it.
It's pretty much it.
Damn, that's clever.
I know, I like it. But
I like it too.
You have to make sure that because the flour is raw, you have to simmer it for a while. Otherwise,
yeah.
It's going to be like have that gummy flavor.
And we recommend, I'm looking at the recipe now, we recommend, it says 3 tablespoons, this is for 8 servings, 3 tablespoons unsalted butter. I also have a Thanksgiving, it's like, what a serving is very debatable,
yeah.
You know? Well, I'm having 4 servings myself.
Exactly.
So is that like for one person or just for 2 people?
And that's why I said our mashed potato ratio is very generous because you want leftovers. Gravy,
yeah.
You must have leftovers.
Gotta have. And then, so it says 3 tablespoons butter and then 1/4 cup Wondra or all-purpose flour. Wondra is that super fine powder that restaurant chefs love, and it's great for like if you're ever sauteing fish and you just want a thin coating of crispiness on the outside.
Yeah, it's the powdered sugar of flour.
I was going to say that.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. That was going to be my line. And so it blends really well.
Right.
So that's so cool. Well. So you can do that ahead of time, and then it can just be waiting on the stove for you.
Totally.
When you're and after the turkey's rested for an hour or 45 minutes. 100%. Depends on how big your bird is. Okay, I'm feeling confident about that.
Yeah.
And then you also recommend sometimes people will add a dash of like Worcestershire sauce or that sort of thing.
Vinegar will be surprisingly delicious. A little cider vinegar, sherry vinegar, just a little because the stock it's rich. It's meaty, it's dark and roasty, it's buttery.
You need something to cut through.
Just
that,
a little bit. Yeah. Not like you're not making vinaigrette, but just it'll brighten it. It'll make it more delicious. My favorite part of Thanksgiving is when I get my mashed potatoes and I make
the
swimming pool.
Yeah.
And then I pour the gravy. I just love it so much.
I've had that moment before where you do that and someone, like when they don't steam off the potatoes enough and the mashed potatoes are wet.
Yeah.
And then the gravy just kind of splits and goes everywhere because like the potatoes
right.
can't hold them.
Right.
I do
but that's
that,
not going to happen because you're hosting.
That's true. I do think it's an important step when you're making mashed potatoes, whether you're Yukons or whatever, put them back in the hot pot, move them about a little bit, and let all that excess moisture steam off.
And it's not a joke when you read in a recipe to not let the potatoes cool before passing them through the ricer or the food mill because there are some things that in recipes I'm like, that's kind of BS. I don't really care. I'm going to see what happens. It really doesn't work.
So make sure they're hot, you're saying.
Make sure they're hot.
Okay. I don't even want to get into the science because I don't understand science. But all right. So we have the mashed potatoes. We have the gravy. We're in a good place.
I could just be done.
Yes, exactly. Do we do turkey or do we do stuffing first? Which one do you want to do?
I feel like turkey's more deer.
Okay. I'm going to beat you to the punch on this one because I think I wrote about this in my editor's letter, but last year I did. All right, so here's what I did. This is not conventional.
Yeah.
Went to Florence Meat Market down on Jones Street, and I said, Maria, can you, like a 14-pound bird, can you take the breasts off? I told her I want to braise the legs and thighs and then roast the breasts separately. So she's like, sure, Adam, I can do. How about we take the breast meat, we're going to fill it with like herbs and prosciutto and roll it up like a little Christmas log.
Wow.
Maybe even had a little like prosciutto or bacon on the outside. I'm like,
whoa,
that sounds
Maria.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
All right.
And then I had the legs and thighs and what I did with those, so I roasted the boneless turkey breast separately and it came out nicely. You know, you get the exact temperature you want with the thermometer. You slice it like a meatloaf. It's very easy. The legs and thighs, what I did, and we have basically a recipe in here that essentially does this, but there's, you know, different ways you can do this. You brown the legs and thighs in a pan. You take them out. You throw in a bunch of aromatics, whether that's onions, carrots, the usual jazz.
Your regular braised stuff.
I threw in some nice cipollini onions.
As you do.
As well, yes, but this was more for eating than for aromaticizing.
Right.
And then
Not a word, by the way.
Deglazed with some white wine, threw in some stock, put the nicely golden brown chicken turkey parts in there, some of these little cipollini onions, put it in a Staub Dutch oven, put that in the oven.
What was your liquid?
Oh, I said turkey stock.
Oh, turkey stock.
Yeah, and
okay.
Some wine also.
Good.
And then probably did for like 3 hours at maybe 300, as I would do like short ribs or whatever. Took the top off, super tender. Let it go for about another half hour with the top off. And then, as you know, I like to hit it with the broiler at the end.
Loves a broiler.
So they get all crispy. And then when it's time to serve, the meat is literally falling off the bone. And
so it's kind of like pulled turkey.
I like to say turkey carnitas.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's just like pulling off the, you have these crispy, juicy shreds, and you put it all on a platter with these glazed cipollini onions, and I'm ladling that beautiful stock from the pot all over it. Oh my God. It was just like the moistest, like juiciest, crispiest. It's everything that turkey is not. I was like, hey man, that little rolled up prosciutto turkey loaf over there, that's cool, but my head.
Let me ask you a question. What did you do with the skin?
Well, the skin is still, because I hit it with the broiler.
You hit it with the broiler,
so
but
the
then...
top skin is still crispy. So that was being pulled apart and sort of mixed in with the shredded turkey meat. And then, you know, and people always like, oh, I want some white meat. I'm going to slice my little turkey loaf thing. And it was fine.
Right.
And it was good for sandwiches the next day. But, I mean, the braised thighs and legs totally won the day.
I mean, the dark meat is just like so perfect for that.
It is, because my dad always liked dark meat growing up, and I never understood, because oftentimes when he would roast the whole turkey, the dark meat was always a little tough, or, you know, if the breasts were done, the dark meat wasn't quite done.
Right.
And I was like, I never really understood it.
Yeah.
But I think it's because we were not treating them properly.
But also the leg of a turkey is like, you know, it's doing a lot of work. It's carrying that big,
yes,
big breasted turkey all
yes,
around
which,
town.
Which is why you need to like cook it down. You got to break it down, man.
I mean, that's smart on a lot of levels, because really, you just said it, when the breast is done, the legs are a little under. And when the legs are done, the breast is over. And then you have a lifetime of American history of complaining that turkey is dry. And this is exactly why. Any butcher will separate the breast from the legs for you. Yeah. And you can roast the turkey breast and braise the legs.
Just roast the turkey breast as you would.
And you're bringing out the best in both of the things.
So I'm endorsing that this year. The one thing that we say in the magazine, like I said, I highly recommend that you do it this way. Roast the breast separately, braise the legs. Emil Stonik, one of our editors, was just writing about, regardless of how you do it, all you need is a salt and sugar brine, a dry brine. Like,
very
you
true.
Don't need to soak it in the bathtub or the Coleman cooler overnight and put it in the garage. You don't need to inject it with marinades. He was saying how many pound? It's probably a 14-pound bird we're generally talking
usually
about.
Usually 12 to 14. So it was 3/4 cup diamond crystal or 7 tablespoons Morton. Not all salts are the same,
yeah,
guys. So check your box. And 3 tablespoons of light brown sugar.
We're saying do it at least 12 hours ahead of time, up to 2 days. And you just want it uncovered in the fridge. So you want that skin to kind of like dry out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, I mean, I've never made pecan duck, but you want that. And that's when you use a bicycle pump and everything. This is totally getting off base.
Yeah, but you need like a combi oven at that point.
Yeah, but but it's the dry skin that's going to give you a nice crisp bird.
Yes.
So, yeah, so let's do that. Let's separate the breasts and thighs this year again.
I could do that. I'm going to spatchcock. That's just what I do.
You're the spatchcocker.
And I grill too. But I will do the dry brine. I always do the dry brine.
Yeah,
the dry brine is critical.
Exactly. And easy.
I like to pick up the turkey. I'm trying to remember. Turkey Tuesday. Mm. I think I pick up my turkey on Tuesday.
Makes sense.
I bring it home. I brine it. That evening.
Yeah.
I hope it's cold enough to put it in a cooler, because I don't really have room for it in the refrigerator. Mm. And
so then that's like a day and a half to 2 days.
Yeah,
by the
Wednesday.
It's about a day and a half till cooking time.
Right. So then Wednesday night, I take Wednesday off of work, just FYI. Mm. I'm letting you know right now.
Yep.
And then Wednesday evening, take the brine off and let it sit uncovered for another night.
Hmm.
So get really dried out, but not too seasoned.
Okay.
And then I cook it during the day. This is another thing. I just believe in, you believe in room temperature roast chicken. I believe in a room temperature roast turkey. I'm not going to be grilling the turkey when like everybody's over.
Yeah. So what time are you grilling? What time people coming
like
over.
Grilling a turkey, first of all, takes about 90 minutes, which is amazing.
Because it's flattened. And you, it's except, flattened. You spatchcock. You take the backbone out.
Do
all
the
that.
Whole thing.
And are you doing charcoal or gas grill?
Charcoal.
Okay.
And then...
Don't you run the risk of burning it in terms of heat control and
charcoal? No, because
charcoal?
You put it... You do indirect heat and you put it over the other side and it gets... You don't even have to put it ever skin side down. It rests on the bone, the internal side, on the indirect heat, covered. I know you have a whole thing. If you cover the grill, it's not grilling, but you're wrong.
No, and I understand this case.
The smoke like goes over the skin side, and it comes out the most amazing, beautiful color.
You're saying you keep it to one side, or you do the thing where you put it in the center, and then you have a ring of coals?
You could do it either way. I always bank it, just because it's like what I know.
You just need a big enough grill that allows you to do that.
Yeah.
All right, it sounds tasty. But if you do that...
Yeah.
You don't have drippings for your gravy.
That's okay because I can make this great turkey stock and then I don't really need those pan drippings.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk stuffing. I love stuffing and it's always one of those things you're like, why do I only eat this once a year?
It's true.
It's so good. And you're like, what? And then every year you ask yourself that. And then every year, it's like a year later, you're like, damn it, I didn't eat stuffing again for another year.
I think it's because you don't have that many opportunities to just throw a couple sticks of butter around just wantonly.
All right. So last year, I made a mistake.
Right. Uh-oh.
In the past, I'd always used or always had my mom's Thanksgiving recipe for stuffing recipe, Maxine's stuffing, which I believe we have on bonapetite.com. I wrote about it years ago in the Ed letter. And hers is old school. Jimmy Dean sausage, Pepperidge Farm bag of breadcrumbs, seasoned breadcrumbs. And you got like your celery and onions, got the giblets mixed up in there, ground up with the... She always had her mother's old-fashioned meat grinder that you would attach to the side of the table.
No way.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So she's grinding
that was like
giblets.
The liver and all that stuff. Yeah,
sure. I know what giblets are, but like she's grinding up giblets but buying pre-made breadcrumbs?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Because that's how you do it. And the Jimmy Dean sausage, which is the best. And like basically, you get your chicken stock and like it's just awesome. So last year... I was like, I wanted to get my brother involved, Andy Rappaport. And as you might know, he's a bread enthusiast. Oh, he's been a guest on the
Foodcast. I listened to that.
Yeah. He and Claire run deep on homemade sourdough bread. And Andy's bread is gorgeous. It's got, it's those round boules with the slashes and designs on top. And you're like, it looks amazing. And it is really, really good.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I got an idea.
Yeah.
So everyone can get involved. Bring your bread. We'll make the stuffing out of that. We'll tear it up.
Yeah.
Dry it out, shards of homemade sourdough.
Yeah.
And then I made it and I think I used Italian sausage this time. I was going a little fancy and maybe there was some sage in there, but lots of stock, lots of butter. It was really sourdoughy.
Oh.
And I was like, that was a mistake.
But how do you feel about sourdough on a regular day?
Don't get me started.
Exactly.
I've already gone. But like you don't accept the flavor of your stuffing should not be sourdough. It should be buttery and sausagey and bready and celery. It should not be like, oh, I'm in San Francisco eating sourdough.
Okay.
San Francisco's going to start writing me letters.
I know. I wanted to be like, I apologize, San Francisco.
But you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't use sourdough.
I totally would use sourdough. Yeah, I would. I would use a crusty country loaf. I would use, yes, I would. I would, 100%.
Just because you're the test kitchen director?
No, but yeah,
title?
Keep going.
Food
doesn't
director.
Matter.
Food director. It doesn't mean you're always right.
That's right. And just because you're the EIC doesn't mean I'm always going to agree with you.
That's true, but I'm always right. So anyways. all right, but I will say this. Can we both agree on this?
I don't know.
That.
Cornbread.
It's too crumbly. The key to any great stuffing, whether you're using Jimmy Dean's or Italian or you got mushrooms in there or whatever, again, you need more moisture than you think. You got to ladle that turkey or chicken stock in there. Ladle after ladle. No joke.
And also the butter.
The butter and the stock, because it's going to be in that oven uncovered and that it's going to evaporate. And you want that super crusty, golden, buttery, crispy on top, but tender and moist inside.
But the down corners are the best.
The corners.
Under corners.
Unless you happen to be baking it in a oval or round dish and there are no corners.
Oh, but the bottom edge of the pan,
yes.
I guess, where
the
walls meet the floor. You know what I'm talking about?
I do know that. I do think, always have a lot of warm stock on hand as you're making it. And you're gonna, it's gonna be more than you think. Yeah, here we go. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Stuffing.
I named that.
See, I like breakfast sausage. I think I would go with breakfast sausage instead of
breakfast sausage.
Italian
I like
sausage.
Because it's got that sweetness, and it already has the sage usually in it. So it is sweet, it's salty, and it's sagey. So I think that's your Jimmy Dean.
And this, all right, and this calls for 3 eggs.
Yeah.
And like I said, so explain the eggs and why.
I think it's helping bind everything together, and it gives it that the baked part has like a custardy texture. It's also adding fat and richness. I think the fat is really important. The amount of liquid and the amount of fat.
Yeah.
For crispiness. Like the liquid is going to help make sure that you never have a dry stuffing and that it's moist. And then you also you mentioned it, but you sped right past it. Another key moment is drying out or staling your bread.
Because staling, I like that.
Yeah,
is that a
you have
word?
To, I don't know. You have to remove the moisture from the bread so that the bread can absorb the moisture that you give it. If you don't dry out the bread, it will just get mushy.
Mushy, yeah, it's not good. All right, stuffing, mashed potatoes, gravy, turkey two ways, or three ways, actually. You got the breast, you got the thighs braised, and then if you want to do it Carlo's way, you spatchcock it on the grill. All of these recipes are available on bonappetit.com. I personally, I don't care about dessert, but I have a feeling you might.
You obviously have to have dessert.
You have to have it, but I'm like, you know what? I'm not making dessert.
For those of you who care about dessert, like normal patriotic Americans, we have 3 different desserts at the Lolly Music household. There's always a fruit something. Apple galette, apple pie. I have made the salted butter, vanilla, bean, apple galette like a million times. It's a classic recipe.
The one in Bon Appetit that's gotten a gazillion views.
It's a classic. Yeah. It's an Allison Roman, all-star recipe. It's great.
And then we have one in this issue called Deep Dish
Apple Pie. Deep Dish Apple Pie, which my parents are subscribers, of course, and my dad sent me an email, and he is interested in someone making this pie for him on Thanksgiving.
But not
so,
him.
No, definitely not. And this is a double-crusted, mile-high apple pie that is really, really good. I'm afraid that I'm going to screw it up and do Claire Saffitz wrong. I don't know. I'm a pretty good baker. I can do it.
And when you say double crusted, it just means it has like a roof, like you're looking at the Astrodome or something.
Yeah, it's not like a galette is just a bottom crust folded over. This is like you layer the dish with the bottom crust, you blind bake that, you make the filling, you pile it high, you do the top. I don't know. I'm intimidated.
I'm not doing that.
I might assign it to Carol because she's a great pie maker.
Yeah, get mom on it.
And then pumpkin pie, I could care less.
I also
do not care about pumpkin pie.
Pies travel well.
They do. And then you said chocolate pecan earlier today. Definitely believe in having a nut caramel something.
Love that. That's my jam.
Whipped cream?
Yeah, I like a dollop I'll throw a little vanilla in the whipped cream, maybe a suggestion of powdered sugar, but I don't need the whipped cream to be sweet. Pecan pie is like the sweetest thing in the world. You don't need like sweet toppings. And I'd rather have whipped cream than like vanilla ice cream.
Me too.
Yeah.
But some people really do want the ice cream. You have to have it.
Well, they're not going to have it in my house.
They're not even getting dessert at your house unless they bring their own.
They can have seconds of stuffing. Carlo Lale Music, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Remember, when I reached out to you about writing this piece, I had a pretty clear idea of what I hoped the piece would be, when you accepted the assignment, what did you hope the piece would be?
I really didn't know yet. I just, like, on the hierarchy of things I think about all year round, Thanksgiving is very high, as is my family. Kind of new into this freelance world, I was kind of thinking about what would I like to spend time doing. And I didn't 100% know. I knew I wasn't going to write 3,000 words on my food expertise,
no.
But I have an infinite amount of words to give on my family expertise and my role in the family. So it kind of started to make sense pretty quickly. It wasn't immediate, but it all kind of just happened. It just kind of flowed out, and I was happy about that.
Yeah, it was interesting. So every year we've done like a Thanksgiving essay in the middle of the magazine. And I've always enjoyed the pieces that we've done because they're about that particular author's experience of what Thanksgiving means to him or her. And we've had people like Patti Smith and Michael Chabon write about it. And I was like, oh, Rembert would be good.
My two peers, Patti Smith and Michael Chabon.
You know, he got the Pulitzer coming. It's on its way. I think FedEx got the wrong address or something.
Hey, this is good. It's like I'm excited for what's ahead based off of what's happened to my peers over the course of their lives.
All right, so talk about the piece in terms of what, because you use your family's experience to sort of shed a light on a bigger American experience.
Yeah, so it actually, the true background of the piece is that me and my cousin Aaron, who's a couple years older than me, one of the first fun things that I ever did on Facebook, this is like 05, 06, 07, when it began, is that we would sit in the corner in my mother's house or her parents' house and just like write down the way the conversations ebbed and flowed over the course of Thanksgiving. And we would just like, we would like literally list them, and then we started putting them into this like Facebook note, which was like early blog post basically. This was before I ever thought that I would be a writer professionally. I was in college at the time, and people like would always comment on these notes. They're like,
give me some examples of
like
notes.
It would be like, it wasn't like paragraphs, it would just be like first it would just be like Mike Vick. And then number two would be like Atlanta mayor's race. And then number three would be like something about Beyonce. And then number four would be like the criminal justice system. Like it was just like, it would just go all over the place. But it was hysterical because my family is like a very smart, very funny, very filterless at times family. And we were just like, this is like the greatest evolving conversation. And we had like 8 years of these Facebook notes. So you could see what would come up every year. You would see the things that would come in and out. I think I wrote in the piece, like there was conversations before Obama, and then Obama began to take over.
You had, if I may, I'm gonna read a little bit. You talk about how 2008 may have been the greatest Thanksgiving in Black history since 1865.
Yeah, since slavery ended. It was the best.
And you say, and you write, Obama had been a staple in our yearly conversations since his 2004 DNC speech, alongside Mike Vick, Anti, Denzel getting robbed from Malcolm X, something about Beyonce, Your Majesty,
yes,
that girl named Ladasha, spelled L-A-A, and arguments over when specific family events happened between the years of 1955 and 1973.
Yeah, that's pretty much, like, that's, like...
But the next sentence is good also. At some point, someone mentioned that the first family should get a pit bull, which was followed by a discussion of Warren Sapp on Dancing with the Stars.
It was the best year of my life.
I mean, that's the funny thing about Thanksgiving. If you get the right sort of constellation of people together, the conversation is like the buffet of food.
It's incredible, you know, and like everyone kind of has that thing that they always go back to. Like my uncle likes to sometimes just like pretend he's like a conservative Republican and just like... Just to stir up the pot. It's like he's like throwing in cayenne pepper. Like he's just like, he's just like annoyed that everyone's on the same side. Like everyone has their lanes. And so, yeah, like it's also very funny that even with new stuff, like there's still those things that we never, it's as if we're having the conversation for the first time. Like you get certain cliques of those people together a lot, but having the whole family together, that really only happens once.
So figuratively set the table for us. Where are you guys gathering? Who all is there?
Okay, so the difference in our family between Thanksgiving and Christmas is kind of like a household by household.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanksgiving, it's everyone, our house, and my mom goes through this.
And is this like worse in kind of suburban Atlanta? Or
it's my mom lives on the south side of Atlanta by the airport.
Okay.
And so still Atlanta. My mom, like the day before, I love getting there on Wednesday because I can watch my mom do this almost like geometric puzzle of like envisioning where everyone's going to sit. Mm.
It's like special ops the day before.
It's incredible. Like, my mom has all these like these four-seater card tables.
Oh, yeah.
And she sets them up considering like how far chairs need to get pushed out so there's still walking room. Like, yeah. It's like a work of art. Now there's like a lot of kids. So my mom factors in that she just puts all the kids upstairs, has like trays for all the kids. So a lot of people, I'd say like 70% of the people are eating in like the main living room.
And so how many is that? Those are grown. How many grown-ups are we talking?
We're talking like 35.
35. And you also mentioned that there's 40. It's not grown. Exactly gender balanced.
Oh, no. It's like there's like a 6-to-1 woman man ratio in our family. It's beautiful. It's like for a while it was basically like me. There's a lot of single mothers and that hat, and then many people just had daughters. So it's like me, and then my mother has a brother, and he had a son. And then so in a lot of family things, it's just us three, and then just all women.
So, how loud does it get in that room?
It's louder than a loud television. Like, it's like the TV is like on. Like, there's typically football on, but it's very much just like a backdrop before the meal. It's often loud in the kitchen. There's a lot of chaos about like who, because some people come and they need to like reheat their food.
Yeah, that's the worst. That's
oven
like,
space.
No.
Like, it's
It's got to be ready to go. You don't get oven space.
Yeah, but it goes from like excitedly loud to like annoyed loud because the magic hour is always like 4 p.m.
Yeah, but dinner never actually starts.
But
at 4
like
p.m.
around 4:45, it goes to like people. Like, either getting quiet because they're just hungry and angry, or people getting, like, loud because they're annoyed and trying to convince us to start without someone.
And then around 5:30 p.m. in the run of your essay, you threw a particular aunt under the bus.
My friends know about my aunt because my aunt is the most, like, fabulous woman. My aunt is, like, what Tina Knowles wants to be when she grows up. She's, like, just, like, the flyest woman. She will stunt on everyone with her outfit to just, like, Thanksgiving. And it just takes her a little longer to leave the house. But to her defense, and I, you know, I'm covering my I'm basically risking my life to write this
piece. Yeah, you don't mention her name, but it's pretty clear who you're talking about, because you said she arrives, she honks, and with little intention of carrying the food inside by herself, because she is equal parts Cleopatra, Patti LaBelle,
yes,
Nefertiti, and Tina Knowles.
I love my aunt. A great thing about my family is fur coats.
Oh, yeah.
Big fur coat family.
Even in Atlanta.
Even when it's not that cold yet.
No.
I guarantee. My aunt used to, when this is the aunt that when my mom would have to work, she would drop me off at my aunt's house.
So this is your mom's sister.
Yeah, this is my mom. And so this is also all my mother's side.
Yeah.
My aunt, she was like, huh, like, I've got Rembert for a Saturday. I'm going to take him to the fur warehouse and just let him run around and wear fur. So, like, I love my aunt.
So this aunt who shall remain nameless, she makes an entrance.
She makes an entrance, but she also comes with 8 dishes.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not like she comes late empty-handed. She comes with the greens.
But then you say, running out of the kitchen, I get a kiss from my aunt as she walks through the door, only seconds away from Cyclops-level side-eye via her younger sister, known as my mom.
Yeah.
So your mom every year is like, really? Again, we're doing this?
Not just Thanksgiving, like every day. It's like the most beautiful sister relationship, but also just like, really? Like, we're into how many decades of this? But it's, like, it's never going to change.
Yeah,
I love it.
No, they're not changing at this age. Okay, so you got the food.
Got the food.
So this is interesting. So the title of the piece is derived from when you finally gather around to say grace.
Yeah. I can't remember what year it was. I remember it being the latest Thanksgiving it ever started. That's all I remember about that year. And my uncle, who is a great man, pastor of a church in Atlanta.
So he likes to talk.
He likes to talk, but also like his day job is talking. So you know, like, Thanksgiving, he likes to eat, and he's also like, this is my day off. Like, I'm not trying to necessarily be a preacher today. Like, I have to be a preacher all the time. I wouldn't even call him the patriarch, because there is no patriarch in our family. It's just like many matriarchs.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of his role to, you know, make sure we're not, like, we go through another year not being complete heathens.
Yeah.
And so I just remember this year he was like especially furious that we hadn't started eating yet. And like we all, you know, this big family crowds around, and, you know, this is after years of really going in on saying grace, you know, maybe like 2-3 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, everyone held hands, closed eyes, and he was just like, "Thank you, God, for this food. Amen." And I opened my eyes, and he had already started walking towards the first plate, and everyone died laughing. And he was just like, I'm not playing with y'all. I'm hungry. I can't stand y'all. It was the best. I think about it every Thanksgiving.
All right, so you guys finally sit down. So you talk about your plate, and I was interested. I was like, wait a minute. You have ham and turkey and meatloaf?
Ham, turkey, meatloaf.
Meatloaf is genius. I've done ham on Thanksgiving, but I'm like, meatloaf? I didn't know that. I didn't know that was an option.
So my auntie Ava makes 2 meatloafs, one for the family and one for me.
Ooh. How often, and this happens in a lot of families, and I don't know about yours, how often are there like serious arguments where like it gets ugly, or like, you know what I mean? Or
it doesn't. I feel like the serious arguments happen the other 364 days of the year. Like, for some reason, like, there's lots of like banter and going back and forth, and like stubborn people with really strong opinions on opposite sides. But for some reason, it never gets mean. Yeah. On Thanksgiving.
Other than you, does anyone drink too much at Thanksgiving?
It's almost like there's not enough time. My mother makes this frappe. You know about frappe?
Here's
the thing. There's lots of things that I have no idea my mom just made these names up.
She might have. So what is your mom's, what's your mom's first name?
Charlin.
Okay. Charlin.
Yeah.
How do you spell that?
Charlyn.
Oh, okay.
So or Dr. Brown, Professor Brown.
Oh, that's even better. So yeah. What is Dr. Brown? There's a soda company. Dr. Yeah. Brown's frappe. What does that include?
It's basically like an entire case of lemon lime sherbet.
Okay. We're a good start.
And ginger ale.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And just mixed up.
Does she serve it like in a punch bowl?
And like a gigantic, like 4-year-old, like a 4-year-old human size punch bowl. It's like every year, and it's like ornate and glass. And every year I have to like carry it from the kitchen to its place. It has a place.
Oh yeah.
And it's always like this. I'm like, please don't trip up. So there's a big one of those. There's that usually gets just run through super quickly, and she has to make another one, and then a regular sweet tea, and then a cinnamon tea, and then like there's like a collection of 4 or 5 people that like very quietly in the kitchen are drinking, and in my later years, I feel like the drinking age in my family at a holiday event is like 28. Like, when I was 21, 22, 23, like, I was, like, it was, like, not okay for me to drink. Like, I had to be 27.
So let's talk about the writing of this piece. I'm obviously a big fan of your writing. I think this is a wildly entertaining piece. It's touching. It's funny. What's interesting, I think, about this piece is that in one respect, you're like, all right, I'm going to write about Black Thanksgiving, capital B, capital yeah. T, for an audience that is probably not Black. I'm also going to write about my own family's Thanksgiving and what that means to me personally. Yeah. And I was just curious, as a writer, how did you kind of go about wanting to strike both those chords and connect with what you knew were going to be 2 different audiences?
I have very little success in trying to appease different types of people. You know, like in my head, I was like, I want to write a good piece.
Yeah.
First off, it's kind of this, you know, walking a line of, I don't want to, you know, hold the reader's hand and like explain, like, I don't need to like sit here and explain like what it means to be Black. I don't want to dumb it down.
Yeah.
I want it to be accessible. I was obviously very happy to get positive feedback from people I know and don't know that are Black. That's a very high priority on my list. Like, pretty much all the time, because like it would be very weird if people were like, yeah, like I'm Black and I'm from Atlanta and this sounds weird, you know, that would be a weird comment. But it was much less about trying to really target an audience and more as like, I think this is like a very interesting story because family is, you know, like,
well, it's universal.
It's universal, but it's also like, I think that's why I added in this. I think it would be a very different piece if it didn't take like a wild pivot. Having that moment where you realize that you are turning into an adult in your own family, like, that's a very universal.
Yeah, so the piece 3/4 of the way through pivots in a way that you're like, hey, I'm 30 now, and at some point this is going to be my Thanksgiving, and I better sort of like wake up to that.
Yeah. If you had asked me to write this last year, like I would not have had that last part, because like this is like a very new moment. It would have been like, yeah, Thanksgiving's great because like I'm around my family, I don't really have to do anything, and it's great. It's all good. Yeah. It's like there's been a new between me and things that have been going on in my life and my cousin Aaron, who just had a kid. It's like we both are like having this like kind of newfound responsibility. We also are two people in our family that currently don't live in Atlanta, but are like kind of know based off of our connection to our family, like are gonna be more involved than not involved yeah. in, you know, our generation in the family and, you know, the children and everything that come under us. Like my mom's never been like, this is gonna be your family one day, so, you know, like take the reins. It's just like the same thing happened to her.
Question, do you know how to make her famous mac and cheese?
I don't. I don't know if I told you that I might have texted you the note my mom gave about her recipe. She was just like 9 parts cheese to noodles.
Good place to start.
I do not know how to make it. I know exactly what it needs to taste like.
Well, you know
like.
What you're going to learn this month to do.
I mean, like this is like there's
you
no
got to learn that, cuz that's something you can make it home.
Yes.
You gotta learn how to make that and the meatloaf.
Yeah. There's like also in writing this, like there's no turning. Sometimes I think I write things out of like accountability's sake. After writing this, like I can't go back. Like I can't not learn how to make things.
Yeah, you put it on paper.
What I put it on paper.
Now you mentioned that your mom went out and bought 7 copies of this issue.
My mom is out here like helping Condé's stock.
What sort of feedback did you get from her or any of your aunts?
Because it was in the print before online, yeah. And what I found out was happening was my mom was calling friends and reading it to them. Which is just straight up the best thing I've ever heard. Like 2017, that is the type of media that I want. So my mom's best friend, this woman named Janice, one of my godmothers, who my mother and Janice have known each other since they were, I think, 3, still best friends. And I got a text from Janice.
At least Janice knows how to text.
Yes. Oh, Janice knows. Janice is great. Janice has also been involved in other stories I've written. Like my mom and between my mom, my aunts, and her like best friends, it's just like material forever because they're all incredible. But Janice sent me this text basically being like, my mom, your mom read me the piece. It was beautiful. Like I laughed, I cried. Also, like, you know, your aunt's gonna be mad at you, and like when you come home for Thanksgiving, like you need to like get ready to fight. And I was like, you're right, Janice. I know. Like I, you know, like I think I would never describe my family as like a family of prominence in terms of like wealth or like political power or mm-hmm. anything like that, but just in terms of how many of us there are, and like lots of my family members are very like involved in public sector, like education and the churches, and it's an important family.
Yeah. They have a presence.
Yeah, we have a presence in Atlanta, and especially on the south side of Atlanta. My grandparents were in Atlanta, and my mom went to high school. Like all of my aunts yeah. and uncles, like they all went to high school in Atlanta. So like we've been there for a long time. So I enjoy being, you know, these are the stories that you don't want to get lost. Something it excites me. Atlanta's like a very transplant city.
Mm-hmm.
So I take a lot of pride in having a family that's been there for generations, because like there's a lot of institutional memory with the city. And I also think that's true in events like Thanksgiving, in some of these dishes that they're being made the same way for like generations now.
Before we let you go, we're going to do a quick Thanksgiving lightning round.
Cool.
All
yes.
right, either or yes. questions. Collards or Brussels sprouts?
Collards.
Is there pork products in the collards?
Yes.
Yes. You looked at me like, yes.
Yes. And no Brussels sprouts at our Thanksgiving.
Oh.
But my aunt that, I know this is a lightning round, but my aunt that comes late, like, she does the collards. They're the best collards I've ever had. Like, I have a Friendsgiving on Friday with a lot of my friends from high school, and my friends, like, request that I bring my aunt's collards to Thanksgiving because they're that good.
They're that good. Set the table or clear the table?
Clear the table because I get to eat while I clear the table. I make another plate while I clear.
Pecan or pumpkin?
Pecan.
Bacardi or Budweiser?
Bacardi. It's not my proudest moment.
Sofa or chair?
Sofa. Oh, my God.
Do you ever unbutton the top button of your pants?
I don't. Because it's at my, it's like the pleasure of like, or the benefit of having Thanksgiving at your mother's house. I'm barefoot in sweatpants.
Oh, wow.
By 2 p.m. Like hours before Thanksgiving even starts.
Shawshank Redemption or Jerry Maguire?
That VH1 Jackson's movie. That five-part miniseries.
Because something's going to be like, on, and you're like, oh, I'll watch this.
Something with Denzel in it.
Yeah. Packers or Lions?
Falcons.
Oh, Falcons. But they don't play on Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's actually, no, it's Lions. I have some family that has some Detroit
All
connections.
Right. Mashed potatoes or mashed sweet potatoes?
More mashed sweet potatoes, but yams.
Yeah. Okay.
Yams.
Final question, and I'm pretty sure I already know the answer. Cheddar or Velveeta?
Velveeta. I literally have no idea what cheddar cheese is. I'm just assuming it's a cheese because it's next to Velveeta.
All right, Reverend Brown, thank you very much.
Thanks, Adam.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and produced and edited by Emma Wortsman. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Gradys, with additional music by Nathaniel Wortsman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.